1, 2. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the debrief. It's Dave O'Neill here. Tony Martin, you know, legend from Martin Malloy, the D-Gen, etc. Sizzletown, which I've just been listening to. Let's give him a call on the landline.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Is Tony there?
Oh, yes. Hi, Dave. He will be right with you. Just 1 second.
I love ringing your landline. It's like, I've got a landline still. I love it.
Hi, Dave. Sorry, just running up the stairs.
No, you're right. I was saying.
Well, are we on?
We're on. I record from the get-go, Tony. It's, you know.
Oh, good. Yeah, sorry, I'm dealing with a cat.
Oh, I've got a cat. What's wrong with the cat?
Oh, the cat doesn't respect the lockdown laws. I'm not sure if it's meant to be wearing a mask.
Yeah.
It's outside. It's involved in really complicated politics with neighbouring cats.
Yeah, it is. Our cat's old now, and you see it look outside and just go, nah, too much, and just come back inside. Because cats get in the backyard and fight, and she's too old now. Our cat's older than our kids, so... Our oldest kid's 17, so the cat must be 18 or 19. So, yeah. How old's your cat?
Our cat is really pathetic at fighting, but thinks the opposite. So he's constantly launching sneak attacks on neighbouring cats and just coming off really badly. And then there's just been so many trips to the animal emergency hospital at 12:30.
Yeah.
And then the next night the cat wants to go out again, and we're looking at it going, yeah, if you want to leave a check for $500 at the front door, we can let you out.
What's the name of your cat?
Shorty.
Oh, that's right, Shorty.
I think I've talked to you about this before. I was once out the front calling Shorty, and not a dwarf, but a man who was about just under 4 foot walked past and assumed I was heckling him.
Yeah, that's funny.
it was a perfect Larry David.
Yeah, my granddad got a kitten and he called it Jesus because that's what he said when he saw it. And it used to offend the Greek neighbours when he'd be back in the backyard yelling, Jesus, come in!
That's great. Well, our cat only has half a tail.
And oh, Shorty.
Nobody can tell us whether it's, you know, been caught in something or whether it's a deformity. But when we got him from the rescue home, they named him Stumps.
Oh.
And you're going, apart from insulting, numerically inaccurate. So
we had
his name changed to Shorty, and, you know, which still tells the story but isn't quite as rude. But changing a cat's name is like, it's like changing your own name by Deadpool. There was quite a lot of paperwork involved.
Oh, really?
You know, microchips that have to be reorganized.
Yes. Oh, we've got Stumps on the... it always reminds me, one of my first jokes I ever wrote was in E Street, the great soap opera. There was a guy...
Tony Martin.
Yeah, it was the Tony Martin, the actor, and it had, playing Reverend Bob, and it had Marcus Graham in a wheelchair, and his name was Wheels, which I always found quite funny.
That's right.
Wheels.
Hey, what about... You'd be friends with someone we know, Roz Hammond.
Yes, Roz, of course.
And she was in that show that's on the ABC with Marcus
Graham.
Oh, The
Heights. Not The Heights.
The Heights.
Yeah.
And then she was like, you know, having to... I haven't seen a lot of it. No. Girlfriend watches all of it. But every time I walk in the room, Roz seems to be pashing on with Marcus Graham.
And he was a real idol of that generation. He was up there.
But then at the end of the first series of The Heights, he suddenly couldn't do the show anymore. And so there's a new bloke playing that character whose name, rather absurdly, is Pav.
Oh.
I think they should just cut to an actual Pav occasionally when someone's talking to him. But I love how there was like, I can't remember what it was, but the first series ended with a bombshell like, I'm afraid I'm the real father. You know, one of those kind of endings. And then the second series picked it up in exactly the same scene, but now a different actor was playing Marcus Graham. I have to talk to Roz.
I love that when, remember when Eric Banner left Something in the Air and to do Chopper, and they replaced him with Vince Colosimo, I think.
And you just, has that happened a few times? Didn't that also happen
Roseanne, famously.
That happened on your film, didn't it, Dave? Didn't that happen on Takeaway?
God, you're good, yes. Yes. Michael Veitch.
It was meant to be Eric Banner and it ended up being Vince Colosimo, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Eric Banner read the script of Takeaway and said, I don't know how you can do this ending. I can't see it happening when the store gets dragged away by a tow truck. And we're all like, nah, it'll be fine. But he was right. It couldn't be done.
That's actually what happened, though, isn't it?
No, he said he'd do it, but then he became very famous sort of overnight with Chopper, and he couldn't do it anymore. So, yeah, Vince stepped in. Yeah, very early on, though, Eric was attached.
But yeah, right.
Also, within the film, the character, like the Ronald McDonald character called, I can't remember what he was named, Bergie someone, was initially played by Michael Veitch. But he...
Oh, you told me this. Michael Veitch is in the film.
Yes.
In the costume.
Yes.
But is Peter Rosethorn? Peter Rosethorn,
yes. Yes. Peter Rosethorn had to step in because I remember seeing Veitch on set and he wasn't coping with being inside a costume. And then he just kind of said, oh, no, I can't do it anymore. And Andrew May played the Hamburglar to Peter Rosethorn.
Wow, there's a name for the part. But Magic. Vince Colosimo, I have a sort of quite a lot of affection for Vince because, of course, I did play his boyfriend in The Librarian.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, right.
And when he was, you know, there was a, we had, you know, as you do, I go on Chrissy, Sam and Brownie quite a lot.
Yes.
And Vince Colosimo listens to that show and I'm always bringing him up.
Yeah.
And he was copping a lot of, shit from people a few years ago when he was, I think there was a story on the front of the Herald Sun that he was working, you know, on a building site.
Yeah. His twin brother's a floor sander, so he often helps him out.
But yeah. I was saying, you know, everyone I know who's not in show business was looking at that story and going, oh, God, that's terrible. Poor Vince Colosimo reduced to working on a building site. And all my actor friends were going, how did he get that?
Yeah.
That's really good money.
I saw him the other day, and it was my first COVID handshake. Because when Vince comes at you with a hand, what are you meant to do? Oh, okay, I'm going to shake your hand, I suppose. All right, fair enough, it's Vince.
Oh, wow.
I know.
And if you have been infected, it is quite great to be able to say that you got it from Vince Colosimo.
Vince Colosimo.
You know, you'll get a comedy festival show out of that.
Of course, he's in that great scene with Eric in Chopper, the no cash.
Oh, it's so great. That's cash. What I was going to mention, because... Yeah. When people were laying into Vince, I said, this is a couple of years ago now, I got on radio and I was saying, well, look, everyone's coming back. You know, Chopper came back in Underbelly.
Yeah.
Roger Rogerson came back. They did a new Blue Murder. Why can't Neville Bartos come back?
He needs his own Underbelly series, Neville Bartos.
It's time for the Neville Bartos movie.
What about just the Vince Colosimo story? You know, just
well, exactly, because
playing
Vince
himself.
Colosimo goes right the way back to the early 80s when he, remember, yes. He was in Street Hero?
Oh, Street Hero was great. And what was the one
and
where
he
moved?
He had like a really great red leather jacket on.
Yeah, and Moving Out. Didn't he do Moving Out? Was he?
Moving Out.
Yes.
Both those films were written by the bloke who wrote Shine.
Yeah, that Moving Out was great. But with that no cash thing, I got in. I don't see Eric that much. I see him about once a year, but I was talking to him on text message one day. And he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to do a footy club. And he just went, cash. I had great pleasure in texting back, cash, no cash here, mate.
That's great. I think we took that scene on Chrissy, Sam and Brownie, and I edited Brownie into that scene.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, he does a lot of cash gigs.
Yes.
And I dodging the whole thing up as, you know, a trailer for,
yeah.
I think the film was going to be called Get Bartos. And it was going to be,
great.
You know, finally the Neville Bartos movie. And then I drove home and I got home and there was a message on my machine from one of the producers on the show saying, Vince called in and says, do you think Tony would have the clout to be able to get that film made? So now it's, the pressure is on for me to actually get the Neville Bartos
story. Hey, you appreciate this. I was just testing out my equipment. I'm sitting in my car. I'm not going anywhere. And I had to play some...
Is that how the podcast works nowadays?
Yes.
You just sit in your car and call people?
Yep, exactly. That's exactly how it works.
Well, nice. Nicely done.
And I was playing a bit of Split Enz. No One Takes Me Seriously Anymore. I love that song. I'm just rediscovering a bit of early Split Ends, and it's so good.
Is that on? That's on True Colours, isn't it?
I think it's Corroboree, isn't it?
Oh, right.
No, Corroboree,
well, or Waiata, as we know it in New Zealand. Michael Gadinski apparently went, no one knows what fucking Waiata means.
Oh, is that true? It was renamed.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because that was the big follow-up album to True Colours, which was the big breakthrough hit album for Mushroom,
yes,
you know, with,
yeah,
with I Got You on it. And then it's like, what's it? It's called Waiata. What the fuck does that mean?
I love Split Ends. You must have seen. I saw them a few times, but...
I saw them a lot of times when I was a kid, like when I was about 7 or 8, and it was like going to the circus because they had a thing about not performing in normal venues. So they'd be at a church or they'd always be at a really strange location. And of course they had the crazy hairstyles and, you know, once you got up to True Colours and Time and Tide, they were sort of fairly normally, you know, they were wearing suits and it, but like in the early days, they were like this crazy circus act.
And it looked like they'd escaped from a mental asylum too. A few of them looked.
That's
like,
right. Remember Darren Casey, the comedian
Darren Casey. Yeah.
He's great. And he showed me an article from a newspaper that he'd kept for years and years and years. And it was from an American newspaper with Split Ends arriving for the first time in Los Angeles and walking across the tarmac and all with their crazy hairstyles, which are all designed by Noel Crombie. And they had this haircut that went up like a top hat and then splayed out like helicopter blades.
Right.
And the article said, the band arrived sporting the apparently ubiquitous Down Under helicopter hair. This is something that like everyone in New Zealand was wearing.
I'm sorry, Tony, you were right. It is actually True Colours.
True Colours, I thought I'd be shamefully unpatriotic for me to have got that wrong.
With Shark Attack, I Got You... Yeah, it's a great album.
And Nobody Takes Me Serious.
The first track on the Poor Boy, which is one of my favourites.
It's like one of those albums where you go, is this a greatest hits album? It's like about 7 singles on there or something.
I always preferred Tim Finn's songs too to Neil for some reason. I just love his... I know, I love his singing for some reason. I don't know why, but anyway.
I hadn't seen a photo of Tim Finn for many years. I saw a photo of him just about a week ago, and he still looks pretty suave. He's still got the hair.
Yeah, I bet. He looks a little like Denise Scott's husband. She always said that.
Very true. Yeah. Denise Scott's husband, going by the clips I'm seeing on Twitter, appears to be going insane.
Yeah. Well, he's a clown. He's a former clown.
He certainly is.
Yeah, he's very funny. Hey, now, I've been listening to Sizzletown, and I just listened to So the last one you did was in June, would that be right?
We're just doing them sporadically at the moment.
Very
Matt's
funny.
Gone and got himself a job, sadly.
I've seen him in Triple M working in there.
Yes, well, ironically, he's producing Mick Malloy's show.
Malloy Kennedy, yeah, I thought it was him. I haven't said hello, I say hello to him. And I always walk past and I go, that guy looks like Pots and Pans. Anyway, I must be a different guy. And then someone said, no, that's him.
Anyway. No, that's him. And the day we're recording this is it's going to be his first day doing that show from home. And he sent me an email going, I'm not sure how this is going to work, but good luck to him.
Yeah, good luck to him. But it's very funny. For people who haven't heard Sizzletown, it's just Tony doing like a late night radio show with crazy people ringing in. I love Shane, the conspiracy theorist guy.
Who has a different surname every episode. I just get, you know, that is... You just get on Facebook, you know, you just go, what's a good conspiracy theory?
Well, have you ever listened to Tony Biggs's Friday morning show on 3RRR in Melbourne?
Oh, yeah, Tony Wilson and I, we used to be the Two Tones.
Oh, that's
actually my longest running radio show. We did that for 9 years on 3RRR.
Oh, you used to follow him, didn't you?
We were the floaters of the station. So whenever someone would be on holiday or be sick, we would do their shift. I think we did almost every show on 3RRR at one point, but we did 3 or 4 weeks filling in for Big Z.
Yeah.
And
his listeners are very loyal.
We were getting his regular callers, and it was insane.
Yeah, they like Shane, but I mean, Big Z plays great music. It's a great show.
It is a great
show. I was listening one day, and a guy rang up sounding exactly like Shane, and Big Z's like, what do you want to talk about? And he just goes, the banks. And he's like, the banks.
It's so much fun just thinking of an insane. Because I improvise, because I do all the callers on Sizzletown. That's why it takes Matt Dow so long. I think a lot of people don't realise that
you do both
I'm
voices.
Playing the host and the callers. Yeah. So it's hours and hours of editing. And then because I improvise the calls, and then I improvise for half an hour, and then we cut it down to the four yeah. minutes that were funny. But with the Shane character, I just think of an insane theory, like, okay, leap year. What happens? Why is there February 29 only every 4 years? Yeah. What are the government doing with all the other February 29? So I just take a stupid idea like that, and then it's like an acting exercise. I try and take that idea really seriously, as though it is a genuine thing.
Oh yeah, well I listened to it and I still can't believe you're doing the voice, because I'm like, oh, who? This must be someone else apart from Tony. But no, it's you, because occasionally.
Because we spend so long on getting the interruptions right, you know,
yes.
That's the key to it. Is you don't just have one person talk, the other person talk. You've got to interrupt each other, so that
yes.
takes so long to get right.
Yeah.
Because I record all the caller parts first. But as I'm doing the caller, I have to imagine that I'm being interrupted constantly by me.
Yeah.
So, and then I have to sit down with all the takes of the callers and write a script
yeah.
that links all of the different takes together, and the script, and then run into my booth and record all those. And it will literally be this. It's just me going, yep. Yeah, that. Yeah, but what?
Yeah.
What? No, you go. So it's just that, and then Matt has to try and chop it all together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he does such a good job, and it is like a real. You make full use of the sound effects world, basically. Whereas most podcasts are just like there's people talking. Yours one is a real. I was listening to it walking along, and it's really good to listen to in the headphones.
Oh, it's really made for the headphones.
Yeah,
that, you know,
right.
Those bits where I'm hanging on a flying fox, being attacked by birds, you know, things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, it's great.
Because it's meant to just be a talkback show. You know, when we started it, I went, it'll just be a talkback show, so it'll just be voices. That'll
yeah.
be an easy thing for Matt to edit. And then by episode 7, I think I'm saying, right, I need you to have a truck with a dolphin tank, with a dolphin
yeah.
in it, in the left-hand speaker.
even the way you got the zoom effect at the start of that. This is the most recent episode I'm talking about, if you want to listen to it, everybody. You got the zoom effect so spot on, because I've done zoom shows via podcast, and it's just,
well, the funny thing with that is I said to Matt, look, you know, all these, even the great, you know, fancy shows like Conan O'Brien and Mark Maron, they all have this tinny
yes.
metallic zoom sound.
Yes, they do.
And I said, can we recreate, like, for the first minute, let's have it sound
yeah.
really shit house and zoomy, and then we'll suddenly have it, you know, like in The Wizard of Oz when it goes to colour,
yeah.
we'll have it go to full frame, proper sound. And Matt spent like days trying to get that zoom sound. And then he called me up and he goes, oh, I've worked out how to do it. I said, what? He goes, I've just recorded it over Zoom.
Yeah, 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 yeah. yeah,
why didn't you do that in the first place?
That sounds fantastic. And I did hear you, because I hear you on Nova in Melbourne sometimes. Because I often drive my kids to school, not at the moment, and you're always one of my son's favourites. And when you had that great joke about, because you do like a news bulletin occasionally, don't you, in Sizzletown? Like a guy.
Yeah. Oh, that yeah. was just for the when the first lockdown started. I started
right.
doing these David Panic reports.
Yes, yeah. the David Panic reports. But I had one of the best jokes I've heard for a long time, and I'll probably stuff it up where you said, and a lot of actors are out of work, and Jeffrey Rush said, welcome to my world.
Yeah, that's right. God.
Because I often wonder, I was talking to someone who's worked with him the other day about what's going to happen to him. I don't know, will he ever work again? Or it's interesting.
I don't know. Is it just that he's so rich that he doesn't need to work again? I don't know.
Well, he'd want to work. He would want to work, I assume. I've heard he wants to work, but he was never convicted of anything. But it's just like, you know, everyone knows, oh, he's like this, and so they don't want to work with him. So,
no, and I mean, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't want to comment on all the ugliness, but my experience of Jeffrey Rush, it's funny because, you know, he was like, a small-time actor for many, many years.
Yes, in the Queensland Touring Theatre Company sort of stuff, yeah.
And Sean McAuliffe used to do theatre sports back in the 80s, and he told me that Jeffrey Rush was like the host of theatre sports
yes.
in Adelaide when he used to do it.
Yeah.
And then Jeffrey Rush was in this show, just before he became famous with Shine, he was in this show called Mercury on the ABC.
Oh, yeah, which was written by the guys who wrote Phoenix and Janus.
Yes.
And it was about a press room, about a newspaper. Michael Veitch was the arts reporter.
And here's, like, this is one of my favourite examples of how people can change when they become famous. Because my ex-wife, you know Annie Maver.
Yes.
She was the first assistant director on Mercury. So she saw quite a lot of Geoffrey Rush. And we would bump into him all the time, walking his dogs in the street in Camberwell.
Yeah.
And I remember he was a fan of Martin Malloy, and he came in once because he just wanted to watch us doing the show.
Oh, wow. Yeah, right.
And, you know, he had a copy of the Brown album. And then I remember he went, his first big Hollywood event was because of Shine. He went to the Golden Globe Awards.
Oh, wow.
And I remember him saying to us, just, you know, it was ridiculous. We were the only, him and his wife were the only people in the room who didn't have bizarre plastic surgery. Like, even the young people from Friends, you know, in the early 20s had this bizarre plastic surgery. And we were sort of looking at, the way he would talk about it was like, I'm just a normal bloke and I will never be affected by any of this.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
And so we were sort of friends with him. We never went to his house, but we would see him in the street occasionally, and he was just this guy we knew.
Yeah, yeah.
And then about 3 years passed, and I never saw Geoffrey Rush. And then one night I was at Judith. Do you remember that show Judith Lucy did called Colour Me Judith, where she leapt out of a coffin?
Yes, yes.
So her dad had just died, and so she had a coffin wheeled out on stage by two men in hot pants, and then she leapt out of the coffin. That was the beginning of the show. Was that the Continental? Remember the Continental?
Yeah, I love the Continental, yeah.
And so I was in the audience. It was standing room only at the back, and I'm just standing there waiting for the show to start, and then I look over and Geoffrey Rush is about three people along from me.
Oh, wow.
And I go, oh, fuck, Geoffrey Rush, I haven't seen him for years. And I went up to him and I said, Geoffrey, it's me, it's Tony Martin from Martin Malloy. And he just would not respond. He was just like looking into the middle distance as though he was hypnotized. And then I felt a tap on the shoulder. And a young woman, I don't know who it was, says, excuse me, can you please not address Mr. Rush until he first addresses you?
What?
That's right. And he wouldn't say hello to me.
Oh, well, there you go.
That was like the best before and after of someone who will never be changed by show business to having a personal assistant.
You'd spend
dragging you away.
You'd spend time with him. That's bizarre.
That was very, and I'm not sure if I've seen him since. I did the conversation hour with him. That's right.
Right. And he said, like,
a bit more normal then.
I interviewed him for the Peter Sellers movie he did at the Nova Cinema. I had to be the guy asking the questions, and we went out for dinner while the movie was showing. And this was at his height of his fame, and people were coming up, the waiters and all that, asking for his autograph. And we walked out into the night, and this guy comes up and goes, excuse me, mate. And Geoffrey just looks at me and he goes, oh, God, here we go again. That's what he said. And then the guy goes, have you got 60 cents?
Did he have someone throw that man to the ground?
No, he gave the man some money. I said, well, you've won an Academy Award, Geoffrey. Off you go.
Wow.
Funny. I should ask you, Mike, I ask everyone these questions, Tony. These are COVID questions. What was the last thing you cooked? I don't even know if you're a cook.
I am a sort of very occasional cook. I'm someone who cooks about probably five different things and rotates them.
Oh, that's not too bad.
And
even though I went to a talk by, was either Jeff Jantz or Gabriel Gattai. Hang on. Gabriel Gattai. I get it mixed up. And because I'm racist. And my French man, I got my French chef mix. And Gabrielle said, every person should have 25 meals they can cook.
That's right. Well, that's what I'm heading towards, because I've been doing so much more cooking since this happened.
Oh, yeah.
And I just get obsessed with little things. So I've just, you know, I've been cooking a lot of roast potatoes.
Oh, yum.
And then I just get onto the internet and I just Google best roast potato recipes. And I have tried about 10 different ones.
Oh, wow.
And I've decided one of the secrets is to parboil them, but with some baking soda that makes the edges all rough, so that, you know, you get more golden crunchiness
That's interesting.
And I've been doing that thing of, you know, infusing oil with rosemary and garlic, and then, you know, putting that on, using that as the oil for the roast. I've just been going insane with roast, trying to perfect the roast potato.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, to get a good roast potato is a hard thing, I reckon.
I just find that the comedian Anthony Morgan.
Morgs.
He used to do this great bit of stand-up about the key word to me making breakfast is synchronicity.
And he used to talk about the toast flying out the window and the...
That is my biggest problem with cooking. I can cook individual things. I just can't get them. I can't bring them to orgasm at the same time, Dave.
It's coordination.
Going, oh, no, the potatoes are ready 10 minutes too early.
It's one of the skills of cooking. Morgs.
And also, I start to go, how do people do all this with... Like, I'm just cooking for two people.
Yeah.
How do people cook for six people with one stove?
Well, me and my partner, Kieran, have been watching, because she loves, at the end of the night of a stressful day, just something to wash over her. And this made Hamish Blake laugh a lot. We've been watching Pie in the Sky, which is...
With the chef, yes. Richard, with Uncle Monty from Whistler and I.
And we were arguing the other day about... Does the restaurant do lunch and dinner, and how do they handle it? Because he's always out solving crimes because he's a policeman as well as a chef. And then my wife said, "We're arguing about a fictional restaurant."
Oh, that's great. My girlfriend is addicted to, you know, Gordon Ramsay's Nightmares.
Oh, it's a great show.
Every episode is exactly the same, don't you find?
What the fuck? He goes through the fridge. There's always something bad in the fridge.
There's always a bit where he throws up.
Yeah.
And then he's just, you can't be serving this, what the fuck? And then and I love how it's so much swearing, but he always says restaurant. It's not restaurant, it's restaurant. This restaurant should not be open. But there was one last night that we just, it's one of his Costa del Nightmares, which are, you know,
Spanish coast or the French coast? Yeah,
exactly. It's all Spanish, you know, English people.
And there's guys that go and cook roast beef there and stuff.
That's right. And I think it's the very first episode, and we just kept playing this one line back over and over, because he obviously has to go into a booth afterwards and record all the voiceovers for it.
Yeah.
And there's one bit where they just keep serving up chicken and it's raw. And Gordon had this line. This was his line that he obviously had to do in the booth. And sadly, the raw chicken just keeps on coming. We just kept playing it back, just imagining him going, not quite getting the melancholy tone right.
Well, that's my next question. What have you been watching or listening to?
Well, I've been listening to I'm a podcast man, and because I have this, we have this project to walk all of Melbourne.
Yes.
And one of and we're into our 12th year.
Wow.
And just before the lockdown came down, we were in Essendon in one direction, Box Hill in another direction, and almost at Dingley down south.
Wow. Dingley is I remember doing gigs at the Dingley International Hotel. Have you come across that yet?
I know the Frankston International. I didn't know there was a Dingley International. I remember the Dingley Powerhouse.
No, I don't know. The Dingley International is in the middle of nowhere near that airport, near Moorabbin Airport. And I can't imagine anyone getting in a cab at Tullamarine Airport going, take me to the Dingley International. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just like the Rat Pack hanging out there. But I think it's where the Dingley, or there's the Dingley Hotel.
Yeah, that may be the Dingley International may have turned into that.
Is it called Boundary? The road that becomes Clayton Road.
Yeah, that big road, yeah.
And they had this giant sign out the front, drive through Palmer's. But there was an apostrophe in Palmer's. So that weekend where everyone was tearing down statues and marching in the streets, my protest or anger was directed at this errant apostrophe on the drive-through Palmer's sign at the Dingley Hotel. And then about a week later, someone sent me a photo on Twitter, and they'd gotten up, they got the ladder out, they'd taken the apostrophe down.
Oh, fantastic.
And I'm going, see, real change can be achieved. But we were almost at Dingley with our walking, and of course, because we have to drive so far to walk areas we haven't done before, we just hear so many podcasts.
Yes.
But now that, you know, we're confined to the local shire, the podcasts are piling up, Dave.
Yeah, yeah, fair
enough. I'm so behind on them all, but I love, you know, the ones we've mentioned. Mark Maron, I enjoy, and Alec Baldwin's one.
Cool.
And Gilbert Gottfried's amazing colossal podcast.
I've never heard that. I love Gilbert Gottfried. He's always very funny.
Somehow Related.
Oh, it's Glenn Robbins.
That's a pretty good. That's one of our favourite local ones.
That's quality. That's me and Glenn Robbins. Yeah, well,
that's a fantastic idea. And then there's a lot of movie ones. If you're a movie nerd, there's one called Blank Check, where these absolute hardcore movie nerds take a director, and they just in each episode of the podcast they go through one of that person's films.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so
right.
We're listening to one on James L. Brooks at the moment. He only made 6 films, so that's quite a short series, but, you know.
But they're all good, his films, weren't they? He did.
Well, they first two were very good. There was Terms of Endearment and Broadcast News.
And then what was the one with Jack Nicholson in it?
That was his fourth one. That's As Good As It Gets. In between, there was a fascinating disaster called I'll Do Anything with Nick Nolte and Albert Brooks, and it was a musical. They shot it as a musical.
Oh, wow.
And then they tested it, and it went so badly that they cut all of the songs out.
What happened?
It's a really weird film to watch because people are clearly about to burst into song, and then there's a cut.
And what was after As Good As It Gets? I loved As Good As It Gets, what it was called. I love that one.
After As Good As It Gets, he only made 2 more, neither of them were very good. There was Spanglish.
Yes, I remember that.
Yep. With Adam Sandler. And then there's one that no one can remember. It's got the blandest name of all time. It's called How Do You Know?
Never seen How Do You Know. I've seen Spanglish. Yeah.
How Do You Know is with Jack Nicholson's last film.
Oh.
Made a film. So it'll probably end up being his last film. And it's with Owen Wilson. But it's How Do You Know, but no question mark.
How Do You Know?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So it's not very good. But, yeah, so we're addicted to that podcast at the moment. But there's so many to choose from, don't you find?
Yeah, I know. There's a lot out there these days. And the last question is, what's the last bit of human contact you had?
The last bit of human contact with a person not in this household? I had to go over and... I'm not married, but I call her my mother-in-law, girlfriend's mum. She's, it'd be rude to say her age, but let's say that she's getting on, and I had to go and drop some shopping off to her under the umbrella of caring.
Yeah, oh, good on you, Tony. You're a good man.
So a bit of care. So I did that, and then she got me to come into her house, and her exact words were, "Tony, can you get my computer to talk to my television?"
Right. Yeah.
And it's that thing that when you're that old, anyone who's under 60 is like an IT person.
Yes, yeah. And it does help that you look like an IT person in people's minds.
I look like I would know what I'm doing, but I don't even have a phone. So I'm speaking to you on Melbourne's last landline.
Oh, I've got a landline. Don't worry. I love the landline. And so did you do it for her? Or
it's
hard. That's hard.
It was really hard because I didn't really know what I was doing, so I fumbled around and then this is like crazy. I think I was getting her the ABC iView. She's wanting to watch Midsummer Murders.
Of course.
So she can bring it up on the laptop, but she needs that to then
plug
go
into
over
TV.
To the TV.
Yeah.
I think I was making it come up on the neighbor's TV. It wasn't working.
Speaking of neighbours, I love your story about the tuba, the kid in your streets learning a tuba.
Well, that's funny because it's true, and I'm trying to record the audio rights of one of my old books have reverted to me, so I thought, well, I never did an audio book of it. So
put it out.
A good project over lockdown will just be to slowly record this audio book. And so then the kid next door has decided to take up the tuba. But the great thing is, I've talked about it now on about 3 different podcasts and on the radio.
On the radio, yeah.
But then I finally talk about it on Have You Been Paying Attention? And for the next week, complete silence.
Oh, yeah. So it's finally reached the... How old's the kid learning a tuba?
I'm not sure how old he is because they've got heaps of kids, so I'm not sure which one is learning the tuba. But it's not really a... You know, I can't imagine there's a queue of kids wanting to take up the tuba.
No, no. Well,
that wasn't one of the ones that
was cool.
That we wanted to do when we were younger, Dave.
No, well, there was a trumpet, which was really cool, and girls seemed to, my partner Kieran learnt the flute, but I got the oboe because it was the last instrument left in the cupboard at the high school.
Most people at my school wanted to play the drums for some reason.
Yeah, of course.
And have I remember, have you seen Freaks and Geeks?
That's one of my favourite shows.
I think I'm going to watch it all again. Yeah. I got the Blu-ray, so that'll be my excuse to watch it all the way through again. But remember when Jason Segel with the drums in the basement?
Yes.
That just was so accurate, I thought.
And that is great. That is, because for people who don't know, it's set in the 70s high school, late 70s, early 80s high school in America.
Around about the year 1980.
Yeah, it's a brilliant depiction of high school. And it concentrates on the geeks, the nerds, and the freaks, who are the bad sort of kids, and they sort of hang out. And Jason wants to be a drummer, but it's a great scene where he realizes he's never going to be one.
It's really well done because normally it would be he would triumph.
Yeah, but no, it was a great, really good scene.
And I think my favourite episode is when the youngest boy goes to a menswear shop and is talked into buying something called the Parisian night suit.
And he turns up at high school wearing it. And that actually that happened to Paul Feig.
Blue one piece suit.
Yeah, that happened to Paul Feig, the creator.
Exactly. It's got the feel of something that really happened to someone.
My favourite bit, I must tell you, is the Peanut episode where the tough kid, who's really great, whoever plays a tough kid is very good, and he gives the tall guy who's now in Silicon Valley, he gives him a peanut, and he's anaphylactic, so he nearly dies. Remember that?
Martin Starr.
Martin Starr. And then the tough kid comes to visit him in hospital where his dad continually hits him over the head. So you can see why the tough kid's the tough kid, because his dad bashes him. And the nerds befriend this tough kid and say, you should come to the Star Wars convention we're going, because he loves Star Wars. Yeah, I'll come.
Right.
And the very last scene is that the nerds are standing in their driveway waiting for their dad or whatever, and they've got like one's dressed up as Darth Vader or whatever, and the tough kid rides up on his BMX, and just from a distance he looks at him and just goes, nah, and rides off.
It's really good.
It's
full of so many
pathos.
Brilliant details.
Pathos, yeah.
And what about when they go trick or treating, and I think Martin Starr goes, does he go as the bionic woman?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's got one of the saddest final episodes, because the show got axed.
Yeah.
And, you know, the story of the scheduling of that show is one of the worst stories you ever hear.
I saw that documentary about it. There's a doco on it.
Yeah, it's a great doco. Yeah. But the sad thing is not the episode itself. It's the way they have to wrap it up so quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just feel for the writers, like, bending themselves into, we've got to kind of wind this all up in one episode. It's really sad.
The pathos is amazing. And when Martin Starr's mum gets a boyfriend and it's the PE teacher from school.
Oh.
And the way they did that is very good. Anyway.
Yeah, it's like, it's tricky to talk about because it's not sentimental. It is genuine, what you're saying, pathos.
It's really
good.
It's
not cloying. It's not corny at all. It just feels really honest.
Really good. Well, Tony, I should let you go. We could talk about Freaks and Geeks all day.
Thanks, Dave. Hey, great. Good on you for, you know, persisting with the debrief, because I do love the debrief.
Well, listen to Sizzletown with Tony Martin. It's very good. It's if you haven't heard it, it's worth just picking any episode and just having a listen.
Yeah, people who listen to it tell me it doesn't really get good till about ep 3.
Oh, okay, there you go. Tony Martin, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Tony.